This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive again, and this is Brooke Spector, your host. This is part two of today's Deep Dive, and we're talking, not surprisingly, about the most recent crisis in the Middle East. I think we would have no choice but to actually begin to address that one this week. Hopefully we don't have to do it over and over again, but, you know, life is the way it is. Dr. Azriel Berman, he is in Jerusalem now as we speak, and he's a foreign policy and international security researcher, an analyst, a historian, an author, obviously, and a public lecturer. His work has largely focused on British foreign policy, Anglo-Israeli relations, therefore, transatlantic relations, regional security, arms control, and the interrelated issues of nuclear deterrence and nuclear proliferation. Lots of words that start with nuclear. Dr. Vermont is a senior researcher at the Institute of International Relations in Prague, in the Center for the Study of Global Regions, and he has a distinguished university background. He studied at University College of London, Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and he's lectured in many places, and he has been a researcher and teacher in all manner of places in Britain and in Israel. Dr. Bermont, it's good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
You heard my intro, which posed a whole series of questions, which obviously require 3 or 4 hours to discuss. We don't have quite that much time. I'll let you have take a shot at that whole texture of questions. Who did win, and how did they win? And is this a permanent thing, or is it yet the prelude to more difficulties? And what was the result of the American intervention in this particular case?
Okay, well, certainly in the short term, Israel clearly comes out with the upper hand here in terms of the damage it has done to Iran, to the regime, to the not just in terms of the nuclear, the damage it's done to nuclear, which I'll come into in a second, but also, of course, the fact that a number of senior military figures were eliminated, not to mention nuclear scientists, the fact that air defenses were totally destroyed, missile capabilities. And I, as someone who has been in Israel over the last, 12 days of the war, I can say, the missile defenses, the home front, it was a very stressful, terrifying experience. I mean, we had 29 Israelis killed, many hundreds injured. But missile defenses, 90% or more interception rate. So the short term, the Israeli attack did a lot of damage. But the role of the Trump administration, certainly was absolutely essential in terms of the damage to Fordow. I think that Netanyahu's circle are euphoric, but they're getting ahead of themselves there. Because, first of all, it was the Americans, it was President Trump who took ownership of once the Americans got involved, they took ownership of it. And we had that right at the end. Americans basically forced Israel to stop the attacks and said, okay, this is enough. And they put an end to the war. And the fact remains, there are a huge amount of questions about the degree to which the radionuclear program has actually been degraded. And I actually think Netanyahu has a huge problem. He won't admit it, but there is a problem, a paradox there. We heard this morning on Israel, on the Israeli Reshet Bet station, radio station, Israel Public Broadcaster, there was an interview this morning with Eli Levite, who was the principal deputy director general for policy at Israel's Atomic Energy Commission, in between 2002 2007, he said that, very interesting to hear what he had to say. He said that this attack will give it's given the Islamic Republic of Iran the highest possible motivation now to go ahead and get a nuclear weapon, because they've seen what happened to Gaddafi, who gave up his nuclear program. They saw what happened to Saddam Hussein once his nuclear program was destroyed. And then, and you saw, you've seen what happened to the Ukrainians, who had to give up their nuclear weapons in the mid-90s. And then you look at North Korea, which has nuclear weapons, and the U.S. can't touch it.
Can I interrupt you for a second? And there's a question that's been raised by some commentators, at least, that by virtue of the fact that the Israeli attack on Iran preceded Iranian attacks on Israel, that is a preemptive attack, it forced the hand of Donald Trump to engage down the road rather than Donald Trump leading the charge, that the end result was that the Israeli dynamic was the key rather than what the Americans might have decided to do after the first exchanges of missiles.
Yes, I think that the Americans, I'm not sure. I mean, the problem with the Trump administration is the messaging is all over the place. It seemed to me that Trump wanted to get an agreement with the Iranians, wasn't able to, but the Netanyahu government was determined to deal with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. For him, the Iran issue, the Iran nuclear threat for him is an obsession going back 20 years. It's a legacy issue for him. And there was never been a better opportunity for him to deal with this problem because of Iran, the fact that Iran's air defenses were basically gone. And the Amer I think President Trump, I think, eventually was got involved because if you know, the Americans believed that the Israelis couldn't do this all on their own, and the American you know, the what happened in Fordow with the American participation could not have been done by the Israelis. Americans had the capabilities to deal with this, but Netanyahu now has a problem because. The Iranians may well decide to eventually to leave the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty to expel inspectors, and if it's really true as Israel's government is saying, and as the Trump administration is saying that Iran's nuclear program is basically being destroyed, or at least distance many years, it will take Iran many years to reconstitute their nuclear program, then what justification does Israel have for launching any further strikes on Iran?
I'm going to stop you right there because just hold that thought. I have to pause for a station break, but we'll be right back after these messages. This is the Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and we're speaking with Dr. Asriel Bermond.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is the Deep Dive. And I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest today, one of my guests today, actually, Dr. Asriel Bermond, broadcasting or conversing with us from Jerusalem. And we're talking, not surprisingly, given the world circumstances, we're talking about the current ceasefire in the Middle East between Israel and Iran, but also the circumstances that led up to it, but the possibilities that may lead out from it. And that's, I think, in some ways, even more interesting and important than how did we get to this place? It's now, where are we going to go now that we're here? And I push that back to you, sir. What's the likely set of circumstances moving forward? You were just on the cusp of saying that Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu now has something of a contradiction to address. If the Iranian nuclear program is now off the table effectively, what's the next move by either side? And so what do you think is the next moves? What are the likely possibilities?
The idea, I mean, supposedly the envoy, U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff is meant to be meeting. They meet some kind of renegotiation with the Iranians, but it's hard for me to believe that the Iranians, after this, will be ready to come to for the regime. The Ayatollah's regime is, the pride is very important. Defiance. If after what has happened, the Iran were to make concessions on their nuclear program, for example, to agree to zero nuclear enrichment, this would be a huge capitulation for the regime. I mean, it would be ideal for this to happen. Certainly, this would be the best possible outcome. Would be if there was some kind of agreement locked in, which would mean zero enrichment, and also the Iranians also idea the Israelis would want also the Iran's ballistic missile capabilities to be halted altogether, work on ballistic missiles. So if the ideal outcome would be some kind of agreement that would prevent Iran from enriching uranium and from ballistic missile development, but it's just hard to see that happening. The problem Israel has is that the Trump administration was elected on the basis of no more wars. Now, as far as President Trump is concerned, he dealt with the Iranian program. He claims that it has been destroyed, even though the Pentagon, the report suggesting that in fact it may only be Iran's nuclear program may only have been put back by a number of months. So, it's not going to be, as straightforward as many certainly among in Netanyahu's circle claiming, and Israel's intelligence, so they're going to have be very very things very carefully, and but it's not going to be straightforward because having carried out this the gone ahead and attacked Iran, I'm not so sure that the Americans will be happy for Israel to carry out more military.
No, I hear that quite clearly. I think Donald Trump having already taken a victory lap, having already decided that okay, that problem has been dealt with, let's move on to something else, has managed to rather inconveniently forget that the antipathy between the two nations, Israel and Iran, still remains. The Iranians still have many other opportunities to do many different things, and even if their proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, the previous Syrian regime, have been weakened or eliminated, there are still opportunities, and the Israeli government may find it needs to do something or believe that it needs to do something about that, which would rather seriously blot Donald Trump's copybook, as we might say. There are some people who say that the Trump administration is simply going to move on past this and just look at the next set of problems. And the argument is always that the White House can't deal with more than one crisis at a time. There are other crises on the horizon that they need to pay attention to. From the Israeli side, though, what would their most likely move be now going forward? What would the government decide it must do?
Well, I think that let's not forget we have to have a war in Gaza going on as well. And you had the seven Israeli soldiers killed for the first time. Suddenly, you're hearing within Israel's government, you had Minister Moshe Gafni saying, describing, why is this war still going on? Soldiers are being killed, and you've got the hostages still there. It's like the question is now, will Trump do what he did with the take the same line as he did on Iran? We want to, in the same way that he pushed Netanyahu to end the war in Iran, he could do the same with Gaza, and I think many Israelis would hope he does so. And that is the big question. But I do I think that from the government's perspective in Israel, I think that they think that Israel isn't done yet. I think that this, I believe, unfortunately, this isn't because of what I've said before, that Iran will, that it has, we know that it is very likely that it has centrifuges, that it has hundreds of kilograms of enriched uranium, enriched to various percentages, including possibly 60%, which takes us close to military grade. I think Iran, the Israel's messaging is problematic because on one hand it's saying, saying that what Israel has done, Israel has, just damaged Iran's nuclear program beyond, that it has effectively pushed it back by a number of years. And then at the same time, we'll see signs emerging that the Iranians are actually not so fast, that it still has material, nuclear material, and that there will be certain suspicious activities that will come to light. And you'll still, without, it won't take long before we start hearing calls that Israel has to act against Iran. So I think I fear that this isn't the end of the road by any means.
Yeah, there isn't time to explore this in detail, but there are people who have said to me that if Iran still has fissile material that's at a high level of enriched capability, U-235, that is the radioactive stuff, even if they are not pursuing an actual nuclear device, this is certainly useful for the creation of what's called a dirty bomb, that is, spewing radioactive material from using a conventional explosive warhead to make that happen. And that certainly should be a concern to the region and not simply just the officials in Jerusalem. Tom Friedman wrote recently that the Israeli government has this well-developed strategic vision for the region, but the closer you get to the nation, to Gaza, to the West Bank, the less strategic and the more tactical, and therefore the more blinkered is the approach to its policies. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, I mean, there have, one sees quite a lot of comment on the fact that Israel has shown its, has been very surgical and precise in its operations in Iran. And then you see in Gaza, I mean, you have many hundreds of Palestinians killed. There is, first of all, Israel, the war in Gaza, unlike Israel's operation in Iran, which is has pretty much wall-to-wall support in Israel, the war in Gaza was obviously when it, or after October the 7th, was clearly enjoyed the backing of the Israeli, the wide Israeli public. But now it's a, seen as a war of choice and increasingly unpopular. And Israel is guided here, unlike the situation in Iran, Israel's policy towards Gaza and the West Bank is guided by the most extreme members of Israel's government.
It has been important and interesting to speak with you, and I appreciate your time. And I suspect we're going to come back to you in a while, and we're going to be talking about what happens 2 months, 3 months, 4 months from now. We'll have this discussion, and we'll be able to look back at these moments as important, interesting, and alive with possibility, if not necessarily possibilities that we can predict in advance. And we will be back again with you next week with another edition of The Deep Dive. And this is Brooke Spector, your host. And I hope that you will, as listeners, let your friends and neighbors and acquaintances know that if they miss this program, they can always listen again on our repeat on Sunday at 10 in the morning and as a podcast a little bit later after that. This has been Brooke Spector with The Deep Dive. And we'll be back again next week with another program to give you things to think about and ideas to contemplate.